Okay, so welcome to the Configuration and Persistency Service meeting. Today is July 3, and we have a fairly full agenda, so we're just going to dive right in, and people will join as they join. Okay, so I see Joanne also joined. So on the agenda is the POC status, resourcing of the POC, and resourcing in general, I guess, decision analysis process using Confluence, POC tier items, and POC architecture options, which Colleen had sent a meeting on with a slide pack, which is, and I'll let him present, but I just want to let you know that I uploaded it to the general CNPFC use case page, which is here. And also at some point, I think we need to just sit down and fill out the rest of the wiki page, which is still sort of open right now. We've kind of got all this information sort of from our project page, but we should probably at least fill out the R7 page. But let's see. So are there any items that are a little more crucial than others? And do we want to order some of these a little bit?
Well, the first three kind of go together, and I'll be pretty quick on the very first two. It's just more information.
Do you want to share something, or do you want to?
No, not for the first two. I mean, I shared, I guess, in the DDF, so there's a fair amount of information on the POC there.
Yes.
So
I also uploaded your presentation made on the POC here as well on our page.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So from the Ericsson perspective, we're Tuan is actively engaged and getting ready to cut code. Tuan will probably talk a little bit more about that, but we're going to be, some of you have been copied on emails, within the CC SDK repo. That'll be where we actually contribute or cut the code, as it were. And that should be starting soon. So the status is the analysis is ongoing. You're well aware of the analysis because I've been trying to drive the analysis and keep people informed in this forum, in this meeting, and a little bit more on exactly how I plan to do that going forward. In terms of resourcing, Tuan has already started, and we expect to have two more people starting essentially at the end of the calendar month. So the first of August kind of thing, we will have two more people from Ericsson starting on this. So we should be moving along in anger. Now, we also have an ambition to present to the architecture subcommittee before the end of July. And engagement has already started with the modeling subcommittee, and I'm sure you're aware.
Yeah.
And that's good. Michaela was telling me that there was very little pushback, and Jacqueline were telling me the very little pushback on the idea that we would have these Yang models visible to be consumed by applications within the ONAP space. So that was promising, but it's still early days, I think, and people may come back with reactions on that as they think about it. So the first presentation has been made in that forum. Okay, and if I can
one quick point on that. Let me see. I attend the modeling calls every week, and Jacqueline did present something right before she went on vacation. And the thing I put an element in here for CMPS, and I think all that modeling stuff should go under this point under modeling, I think Epic 382, just so you know, just so you're aware.
Okay, that's good to know. Modeling 382.
I created a thing which, anticipating there would be some modeling work to be done, and just so you know, I'll put it in here so that you can.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks.
Good here, Jira 3. And if you have more details of what you want to do, you can just add it to this ticket here to just describe what it is. You wanted to share, go ahead.
Yeah, see if I can figure out how to do that now. Screen share, screen three. You can see my screen?
Not yet.
I probably have to click something else and confirm it. Yes, I do. I have to click share.
There we go. Now I see it, yeah.
Okay, so I have under your configuration and persistency service R7 page, I have created two additional pages. The first is the high-level design and the proof of concept. So this is what I expect to be presenting to the architecture committee before the end of the month. So I haven't got much in here. It's just, as you can see, a placeholder. And then I had uploaded a presentation with a load of stuff in it, and I thought that was kind of an inefficient way to work. So instead, I decided to start a page with child pages that would actually look at each of these decisions and issues and what assumptions we're making so that we can discuss them. So we had looked at this integration pattern for current historical, temporal, and time series data. And we had, as far as I'm concerned, made a decision. And if I go into this page, and I'm going to let Tuan take over after this, because there has been some, let's call it, slight adjustments to that decision. I don't think there has been any material change to that decision that we made, but there has been slight adjustments, and it's just maybe worth confirming it in this forum. Then we have issues that I think we need to discuss, like the interface style. I have some information on this page and data representation. So the interface style, each page follows a simple format, the summary of the decision. And here I've just got a proposed decision. It's not a decision as yet. The details of the problem in terms of why the interface style is important. The different options that people can look at. These are just samples of what the different styles of interface would look like. And then a discussion. So this is the thinking, my thinking, that I'd like input from the community so that we can actually confirm the proposed decision as the decision and then reflect it in this table here. So that as and when we make decisions, we record them. We have a discussion. And I'm going to go in here now and hand over to Tuan. Are you ready, Tuan? So in here, we have had discussions on this where we, and here I'm referring to meetings. I should probably link the specific call to meetings, but I didn't get around to that. But we had on our weekly meeting on the 12th discussed this, and we chose option C. And then Ted and Bruno had both engaged subsequently with slides on the POC that's happening or the work that's happening in Bell on the state DB. And also Ted has provided input on the difference between temporal and time series and how a single DBMS technology, i.e. MariaDB or Postgres, can support two. So I'm aware of that, but I don't think they materially change the decision. Tuan, do you want to take over from here? Do you want to share, or shall I just leave it up?
Yeah, just leave that picture up there because that's all I was going to share. You took most of my thunder already anyway. So as
sorry
you said,
about that, Tuan.
No, all right. Because of the discussions or the extra information Ted provided in the last 2 weeks, we just wanted to go back to these three options and clarify if we still want to go with option C or has our thinking changed and we want to go back to option A or B or maybe experiment a bit more with any of the alternatives. So I asked Bruno yesterday if he wanted to discuss that today or was it necessary to call a separate meeting, but I understood correctly he was happy enough to discuss this today and we can make a decision or have a way forward, which we're going with this. I do want to say about option C, which still has Ericsson's preference, given our experience I also personally really like the idea that the two different concerns are clearly separated. I still think that the time series use cases will be specific use cases and it won't apply to everything. So I'd like to, just from a logical point of view, like to keep them separate. from a database point of view, it is possible that the two databases at the bottom actually are one and the same database again. So if and we have already earlier on discussed this idea of pluggable database technology. So for performance reasons, we can decide to either in a POC maybe use one database and later plug in two different databases, and that third option C will give us that flexibility to do that, but still give us the option to use one database if it supports both interfaces. So yeah, I want to give the word to Bruno, really, or what's your feedback at the moment, what's your thinking at the moment? Are you still happy to go with option C, or do you want to consider other options again?
I think B or C are the one that make sense to be able to separate clearly the current and temporal. So now between B and C, the difference I can see is the difference depending on the let's say the complexity of the two API or the complexity of the business logic to clearly separate them, or
the big difference.
Is the big difference there, or the way maybe both the API and the logic, if remain quite simple, could fit together and now will fit in option B? That's what I was wondering a bit, the difference.
B, the business logic becomes quite complex because it has to try and figure more things out. It also has to understand both SPIs because the SPIs are different. And then I can actually understand option B if we were only going to write information to the database. But then when you're querying information, it becomes a lot different when you're querying or reading that information. How do you not have a separate interface where you want to specify time, either points of time or ranges of time? That's one of the big aspects of it. So the API layer becomes a little bit more complicated because you're merging two different constructs or different drives or different use cases. The business logic becomes more complex because it has to understand the multiple different SPIs. And if we had a time series SPI as well on top of this, then the pattern begins to fall down. It doesn't scale. So that pushes me towards option C. So there's a bunch of reasons. So option B is definitely better than option A, and it's very much a move in the right direction. But option C makes it better again, because now you get the power to expose things. And as Tuan says, the two DBs could be the same DB. They could actually be the same database instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If the two databases support the both the different pattern or with the plugins that we already discussed, yeah, it could be the same. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this gives us the most flexibility and probably the best optimal performance for the given use cases, without adding a whole bunch of complexity or requiring a redelivery of the business logic, a single business logic. So I think there are sufficient reasons to prefer option C.
Can I maybe add one more reason? I'm literally just thinking of it as we're speaking. Also, if we're working, different teams are working on different use cases, which affecting maybe if we have option B, they might be both be affecting the same API at the same time. That might be a bit awkward if they're clearly separated. Also, from a practical point of view, different teams working on it on different use cases might be another advantage of option C.
So Tony, question. I was not a little bit too high level. The API, we try to define the APIs, right? So option B, so which API are you talking about in here?
Okay, here I'm talking about all the APIs. So, and we'll come, the very next item on the analysis is the style of the interface. And I'm making an assumption that we need both a REST interface, because that is the prevalent style for external interfaces in ONAP. And people can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm making that as an assumption. But internally, the CPS will be providing a Java interface. So the style of that interface and then the payload, how we describe the data that's being added or removed or read from the database. These are decisions that we have to make, and those are the next two issues that I want to get through. So yes, it is both the Java API, and if someone wants to create a Python implementation, a Python API and a REST API for the vast majority of users within the ONAP space.
So in the ONAP, I don't think REST API is a standard API, because each time you change the API, the post that will be the, in other words, each time you change the API, you had to change the code in the both side in terms of application one to application two.
That's not 100% correct. And really there are, if I'm going to pop out of this just for a second, this view and look at the interface style as one of the issues that we need to discuss. This has implications for both the REST and the Java interface. So you're talking primarily about the Java. And then the second one is the data representation. So these are things that we have to decide. I haven't written all these things down yet, but we need to design this interface, and we need to try and make progress. We can't decide all of these things at one go, to my mind. So I'd like to defer the design of the API until we get there, until we have phrased all the questions correctly. We don't understand who's going to use it. Yes, I have made an assumption here that the standalone access interface technology will be REST. I think there is an architectural drive to harmonize how we document interfaces, and there's been a big push around REST. Now, I don't mind. I don't have a huge amount of skin in this game. If the community feels that REST is the wrong and that we should move towards a gRPC-type interface, then that's absolutely fine by me, and I will try and represent that to the architecture committee.
Yes, but as far as I know, the REST API may not be the standard. At least the one we're talking about, the second one, when you treat two large data sites, the REST API, it's not that fast. Because that's why they try to introduce the DMAP, maybe the committee or standard, they try to use a different data set to post to.
Yeah.
Instead of the REST interface.
Yeah. Can we take that? I'll move it up to an issue. And I won't make it as an assumption. And then we'll take it as a discussion item in one of these meetings standalone. So the agenda was pretty full today.
And I still have a question to your option two. I didn't quite understand your option two, option three, meaning the architecture.
These. Yeah.
I just don't say, let's say the architecture for the tangible meaning, right? For the CNPS, you have the data set put into the data. You have, say, the one from the SDNC or SDNR set put the data into between the interface API you need to define, right? Another one will be from the DCAE data set from network. You need to define between this one to the CNPS. This is the second API you're going to define, right? I'm just trying to see for the architecture per se. And the one, if you have another API, will be from the model-driven, the DMAP post. So the one in this side, you have the API, but you know that one depends on how much you're going to change the data model.
But Joanne, you're getting into the interface design. I don't want to get into the interface design on this. This page is not about the interface design. This page is about the internal architecture and how we handle different database technologies for different use case types. So we're looking here at the current representation. So information as it reflects, or the runtime configuration of the XNFs, how do we store that? So that's the current.
I think there was a valid point, Tony, on the synchronous versus asynchronous APIs, which aren't reflected here.
Correct. And that is correct. They have been reflected previously as DMAP and REST. Mm. So that those were, yeah.
So I think if we can call that out more clearly, I think, on this picture. And so, for example, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that we would expect that the current API would receive updates from DMAP, which would then be persisted into the current DB via the current SPI, and those events would be propagated on selectively, potentially, to the and asynchronously to the temporal component, for example.
So the current, I'm just a little bit, because it was missing last week. So the, let's see, internal database design, Tony, right, for this one. You get API, whatever feeding you have, then you pass to the CNPS as internally. And then you build a business engine as a business logic in here, right? And your business, I'm just read the chart you have, compare option B to option 3. So in option 3, the difference, you want to have two business engine. Maybe you can, I will elaborate more. What's the difference between B and the C?
The difference is you don't have a single CPS core or business logic as it's represented on this graph here. You don't have this trying to directly understand. I can't do that. I can't do a pointer on this one, but you can see my mouse. This business logic needs to understand the SPI for the current DB and the SPI for the temporal DB. Okay. This one doesn't. This interface is trying to support both current and temporal access. This one is not. It's providing only access to current data, whereas this one is providing access to temporal data.
I guess the question could be, why would you want to do that?
And the reason you would want to do that are for characteristics reasons, because there will be other types of SPI. And each time you have a new type of SPI, you're going to have to teach this guy about them. And that becomes a bottleneck. It becomes more complex than it needs to. Whereas in this scenario, we're sending an asynchronous message based on a model-driven notification to say, in the event that this happens, please send me a notification. So this loose coupling comes, and then this stack is able to take care of it in a way that is optimized for that use case.
And in the scenario on option C, where the current business logic is able to deal only with what is currently in the network right now, this is exactly the state that we expect to see. It doesn't have to worry about the fact that, for example, network functions may have appeared and disappeared, may have been renamed and so on and so forth, or worry about anything to do with temporal aspects. And that allows it to very, very tightly optimize towards the kind of sort of relationship-based querying that you might want to focus on for, you know, finding correlations between parameters across the network. Whereas on the right-hand side, you're probably, and this is, I guess, the question down towards how the use cases are defined, you're probably going to be looking more at, for this particular network function, how has this value been changing over time? So your characteristics are going to be very much more focused on certain parameters and how they evolve, whereas on the right-hand side, you're going to be looking for more to do with relationships between things and the current state of affairs. So they're very different concerns in terms of characteristics and the types of querying that you're going to run.
So it seems to me like one of the key sort of decision points is how important do we view the temporal, you know, the temporal sort of data that we might want to manage, right? So I think, engaging Verizon Wireless, it seems like that's an important aspect of something we want to take into account, which is great because you've done that here. So it seems among the various options, how prevalent then is sort of the next question is this temporal, management, if you will. So And it seems
I guess, Ben, it's not just how prevalent it is. I think it's a very important use case, but I think it has very different characteristics. And I could be wrong on this, but my sense is that you're not going to be merging graph style queries where you're looking at sort of cross network dependencies along with the sort of the temporal type queries.
Yeah, no, that's not what I meant. So let me get to my point.
Okay, sorry.
So here we have a temporal, you know, I kind of see an option B and C. We have a temporal database essentially, right? And then in and I think the main difference, if I understand this correctly, between option B and C is that you're sort of presenting a single, interface in option B, whereas in option C, to access the temporal database, you would go through, it would only be accessed through the current business logic, and it would have its own separate database. Is that right?
Yeah, the stacks are completely separate. They're coupled based on a model-defined notification. Mm-hmm. So in what information do you want to be updated? So this is how we manage the relationship to say, okay, there's specific pieces of state data that are of interest to the temporal use case. So that temporal use case will essentially set a model that says, in the event that these things change, please put a notification onto DMAP. So when the notification is put onto DMAP, then the temporal stack will take a note of it because it asked for that. And then it'll update its own temporal store with that information or with that change.
So that's Tony, how the... let's see the design, right? Just internally, let's say the network, the run network right now, we got the initial setup. You already have the network, say, at the now, like say version one, like, so you have this type of network. So then the run say, the anything parameter change, you get notification. We need to say, oh, we have a new parameter come in, right? So then you notification, you get API layer from the, you just say from your CB, you both get notification via B, via C. You come from the step, the next block, you say next block. Next on your business logic, and then you have current business logic, you come to the from option C, you come business current logic. So then and you say, oh, we have the current version one network, run network. Now we have a new parameter come in, right? That's your plan to segregate the you know, TED junction, the things, right? Say, we have a new one come in, just normal thinking. So the new one parameter come in, you pump to push into current SPI, or you come to the new API layer. Just let's talk from high level business logical perspective. So how the data you put in here between B and C?
I don't understand the question.
The question that I'm a question, let's say the case scenario one, we have the business that's just truly, you know, CPS. We have the run, we say network one, right? That we're current network of the up running, right? So we have this current state, so this current, the CPS capture network right now, say what called, you know, A, right? So we A. Then the network change, constant change to the network B, right? So the B, then you have with new parameter update. So in the parameter updates, let's walk through your business C from API, say A, then come to current business logic. From current business logic, what's the next step you do? Let's just walk through this scenario.
Okay, go ahead, Kieran.
No, I'm just wondering, is the question if an existing parameter that is in network version A has changed when you upgrade to network version B? Or is it that a new parameter has been added that wasn't previously in network version A?
Let's say the current, let's say just, we can say the two, we don't say mark D, let's say add. We're adding, add a new parameter. Somehow we change the, you know.
So the parameter didn't exist in the original network and now it does exist.
Yeah. So you ask you add one, the new one. Let's say if we change the one. Let's say walks through at least one scenario. So what's the case? Well, then we can compare, right?
I guess that's onboarded as a new Yang model into the system, and the parameter is now available in the new Yang model that wasn't available in the old Yang model.
Yeah, but in the Yang model, it's static, right? Parameter, say you come in, if you the mainly the parameter from database, you come from network, right? So network elements are holding Yang model, right? The true Yang model, the real-time Yang model, right?
So the network describes its parameters in a Yang model.
Mm-hmm.
And the Yang model is onboarded into the model database, mm-hmm. which isn't on this picture. So the second version of the Yang model contains this new parameter, and the first version of the Yang model does not contain that parameter.
Mm-hmm. So Tony, go ahead.
Do you follow that, Tony?
Yeah, I do. And I don't want to answer it, but I will. I mean, the whole purpose of having this slide is to describe the different levels of integration that we can have between different database technologies and what is the correct approach to deal with it. It is not to solve everything. Joanne is running off and trying to sign everything, and I fully accept that we need to solve everything. It is valid. Can I finish, please?
Yeah.
Joanne, can you please ask or add issues to this page that we need to address? Because then we can address them in isolation and have an organized and simple conversation about each, rather than trying to blur the lines and getting no progress because we'll not solve everything at the same time. I'm looking for a way of working here so that we can drive the conversation forward in steps rather than in leaps, because I don't think leaps will work. Now, coming back to this particular concern. One is, if the network has changed, if an XNF has had an upgrade, it will have a new Yang model, which will have to be added somehow to the ONAP system. It's not on this picture. That's model lifecycle management, which is a different picture in a different presentation and a different issue to be solved. But assuming that that model is onboarded somehow, then the current business logic will be made aware of it, and it will then be able to store information for any model that is compliant with that Yang model, that XNF Yang model. If in turn will have been annotated by its onboarding process by a use case that has interest in that, and it can't be interested in it if it doesn't know it exists. So there is actually design work required for the use case, let's call it a temporal use case, to say, I'm interested in this new attribute. So only when it has said that it is interested in that new attribute will this black line be engaged. So number one, an XNF compliant with the new model is going to emit an event that will somehow, magically, through controllers or DCAE or somehow, cause an update to occur to the current API to say the state of this attribute is now being set for the first time or it is being updated. It goes through that API layer, hits the current business logic. The current business logic looks at the model for that, figures out how it should be stored in the database technology of choice, and at the same time says, aha, there's somebody over here who also is interested in that. So they will emit a notification via DMAP or whatever is the preferred notification protocol, which will then be consumed by the API layer of the temporal business logic, which will store that same information in its temporal SPI. So there's several things involved here. One is the onboarding of new models. Two is the updating of those models with behavioral information to say that we have a second party that is interested in notifications about changes to that attribute. And the third, of course, is that we have a separate stack that's capable of consuming that.
Ram here. I work with Bruno, new to this forum. Couple of questions, Tony. One is on option C, right? The software stack I mean, in terms of the code base, right, they will be separate and separate Docker containers, right?
They do have Docker container. I don't think they use Docker container.
Okay, I don't want to get into the deployment aspects of it. They could be.
Okay.
That is a separate concern. This is a logical view where I'm trying to set up the logical pieces of software. I mean, I would fully expect that each database is in its own Docker container backed by its own persistent store or related to its own persistent store.
From my side, I see option C to be much better because of the fact that we have boost coupling there over DMAP or any other technology. And in case a use case or a team wants to bring up their own stack for handling the temporal DB, right, then they can plug in that over DMAP and start listening to message from current business logic.
Yeah, I think if you're sticking to microservice pad design patterns, the stack on the left-hand side would be two probably containers, and the stack on the right-hand side would be two containers.
Yeah.
But as has been mentioned previously, you could share the database if they leverage the same technology. Then you could share the DBMS, for example. And I think Tony was alluding to the fact that if they're all written in Java, then they can coexist in the same Java runtime, logically. But I think it does make sense if they are loosely coupled and executing different types of use cases that they could be deployed independently.
Yes. And that's how I have seen, I would say, even other components in ONAP designed this way. If I give an example, then policy is designed in the same way. So I see C to be an option for sure.
I'm still have a question. Let's see. At the east, we didn't go to the deep. Let's still high level, right? The model driven, you get it. The YAN model initially, that's the onboarding for YAN model. It's static. Only you want the distribution to the DMAP and the CNPS pick up that model, then you design, right? That model for the YAN model, you come from the onboarding modeling only one time. You gave you one time. So truly network YAN model from design into network element. So each time your network element, say Ericsson in the run network, right? You have the element. So the element in here in the run, any parameter change, the YAN model will be changed. That YAN model is truly updated to the CNPS quite often. It's not updated by the distribution for static from online from the, you know, SDCs per se.
Okay, Joanne, I want to interrupt you because the terminology that you're using is ambiguous. Okay, I want to talk about three things in this area. Okay, we have a YANG language. Then we have YANG models that are developed by the node organizations and are delivered typically with the XNFs. And some other things may also create YANG models. And the third thing then is data that comes from the XNFs that is related or is typed by the YANG model. So if I'm a 5G radio access node, I may have a concept of a cell. And that cell will be defined in a YANG model. YANG as a language doesn't care about that. YANG as a language doesn't care about that, but the YANG model that comes from the XNF does care about it. It will have attributes that will describe the properties of that cell.
Tony, I think the question was related, as I understood it anyway, was related to the fact that if the network element is being upgraded very frequently, the YANG models won't always be onboarded. The YANG models specific to that network function won't always be onboarded through SDC.
Yeah.
And so I guess in that context, the onboarding through SDC is one possible valid approach. And if you're onboarding software packages through SDC, then you may also onboard the YANG models in those software packages and they get distributed that way. That could be one approach that gets taken, or the other approach is that they get discovered from the network via a controller. And I think both of those were documented and described in the presentation last week. as options for updating the AI models in the model service.
Yeah, so the I ask you, Tony asked you a question in the DDF, right? So in the Guilin's release, you mentioned, I even talked to Makila, right? For the pre-onboarding use case. So in the Guilin's release in R7, so the YAN model, it will entirely the onboarding package come from vendor onboarding. So that YAN model will distribute onboarding, then distribute to downstream in the interface agreement. So entirely, like say Andy Meyer doing the modeling, so the like information, like modeling, like SDC. So entirely YAN model has now the mapping to the model for the resign to SDC yet. So given the time for frame from the Guilin release, so we continue use the distribution vendor onboarding YAN model package to the downstream, which is a CPS pickup from DMAP. So that YAN model will be the vendor specified YAN model we're talking about in here, right? Then you will be initial design. Just make sure we're in the same page, right? Tony, you agree at this point, right?
I don't want to talk about that right now.
So then, because the truly the things a little bit different from the design for this.
But that's...
I think, Tony, what you're trying to say is that we probably need to have a deep dive in model distribution. And
we absolutely have to have that, because that's very much in architectural discussions. And I have said that previously. In order to figure out how models are delivered into the ONAP system, how different parts of the ONAP system are aware of the different types of model, whether or not the XNF extensions, the XNF's models are part of the ONAP information model, or whether ONAP information model is simply aware of them. All those things need to happen both at architecture and at ModCom, the modeling committee.
But
this,
I think
this discussion is, I mean, it's a rabbit hole that we're going to get. No, I'm getting quite frustrated. I need to stop talking.
Maybe, Tony, maybe we need to, maybe the title of this slide is a little too broad. Maybe if you focus the topic of what you're really trying to, I think, describe here is, we're trying to decide between temporal database support.
The topic of the item is integration pattern for current historical and temporal time series. And yes, I agree. The title of the slide is very wrong, Ben. Apologies for that. It is literally the integration pattern for current historical and temporal times and etc. That's what I was trying to focus on.
Right.
I think the pattern of onboarding an updated Yang model, though, is an appropriate aspect to discuss here, Tony. I'm sorry to have to say it, but the reason why I think it's important is because it has a bearing on how the data that's represented on the left-hand side of option C and the data that's represented on the right-hand side of option C will be impacted. And I think one of the challenges that I was trying to explain earlier, and the reason why I see a clear differentiation between the use cases, is that as the network vendor delivered models are updated, the view on the right hand side can forget that the Yang model from version A was ever there, and it can continue to think about things only in the context of the new and updated version of the Yang model, and it can focus on that as being the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Whereas on the right-hand side, the queries that you run against the right-hand side will have to cope with scenarios where, as you go further back in time, the versions of the Yang models that were supported at that point in time will change. And so the parameter will have been present at time t, but it may not have been present at time t minus one. And so therefore, the characteristics of the queries will be very much impacted by holes in the data, version changes, and so on and so forth. So I think that in terms of how we support that change of parameters in the network and how we reflect them in the two different technologies and the two different persistence layer, and we cope with querying across them in the different business logic layers, I think is one of the reasons why separation of concerns is important here. Well, that's my two cents.
I guess one of my points I was trying to make is that the reason why maybe you're getting a broad spectrum of questions, for example, from Joanne, is that maybe the title of what you're asking isn't focused enough. So, you know, just pick two words like temporal database support or something like that, you know. And the other thing I was curious about was, are we applying to, we're not planning to go to the architecture subcommittee with like, here's three options, help us choose. I think we should go to the architecture subcommittee with, here's options we considered and here's our decision, or make a decision here and then just present the solution. I don't think, because the architecture subcommittee doesn't have the bandwidth to entertain like an hour. I mean, we've spent 40 minutes discussing this already, right?
I completely agree. And that's why we need to get these and then record them as decisions for each element.
Right, that's
what I want to do as a way of working.
Yeah.
I would like to define a specific problem, analyze that specific problem, decide what it is, and then update the design of the POC to take that decision into account, and then present the POC to the architecture committee. And then if they have any questions, refer them to the decisions, the meetings, the discussion.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Hey, couple of questions on the I have on the option. If we go back to the diagram, let's say for the temporal API in option C. I mean, is it correct to say that every update will come to the current API, and if ever the temporal API need to be updated, it will go through the dash line and loose coupling to update the to have any update in temporal API.
But no.
The temporal API, is it only to retrieve, or even some update, or can come also from the temporal API on option C?
The way I see this is that the API on top of the temporal API, let's call this the temporal API.
Yeah, temporal API, yeah.
Okay. Is accessible to anybody who needs to make use of the temporal data to access it, but also for other sources. So I don't see the current API or the current stack as being the sole source of information for the temporal API. I wouldn't make
even,
that.
To access the data, for sure, temporal API will give access to the data. But even for there is some use case that will be also be able to update the temporal API through the temporal API without even any relationship at all with current API. It will be a completely separate flow in this case, right?
It's okay. I don't want to design it, and it depends on the use case. Mm-hmm. So if that temporal stack was only meant to store information that had changed and had been defined by the current stack, then you could lock off the write access to it completely. But if the use case was to say, well, actually, there are n sources of information and changes in the current stack or the current state are relevant, but they're only one source, then you would enable the write access to that as part of its design. I don't have a good enough visibility on that to state exactly what kind of a use case it would be. But that would be a design of this stack to decide whether or not this was the sole mechanism for updating state in this stack. Or if you needed other ways in as well.
I think the challenge there would be if you're representing an item of state that is entirely represented as a historical view of the data that's persisted in the current database, then you wouldn't want the information in the temporal repository to be updated from other sources. But then there might be other pieces of information that are not reflected in the current persistence layer that may be updated from other systems. So you may need to have some sort of data mastership in that context. So
can I just add to Tony, still I try to say, just you don't talk about, let's talk about just say, what is the API for your local design purposes, the schema, right? Talking about, we have to say the topic, what's the topic? Topic is to define what is a temporal API versus a B option? If this is an agenda you want to try to do to discussion, then you say, what is the temporal API? What's the API, like say you have in the option C versus option B? So from your picture in here, B and C, right? Business logic, one, you have only difference from B to C, you're adding one API layer from option C, right? That's the only difference from picture. Maybe you can elaborate, maybe I mean,
I think that there's a big difference as well in the business logic as well, and the complexity of the business logic and the life cycle of the business logic and the development of the business logic.
Okay. So the basic
guess as well, the types of queries that you might expose over the current and temporal API, you may sort of have a closer merging of the types of, you know, in option B, I think you'd kind of have an expectation that you could run a query on the current, and then you could also say run the same query or the same type of query, which kind of did a kind of a graph exploration of the network and historical, so multidimensional. Whereas on the right-hand side, you'd probably want to do either the graph-based or the temporal-based as kind of separate concerns. So the API syntax would be quite different. Was that the question? Or?
Yeah, because when we design, yeah, go ahead. I'm just still trying to digest you the difference between B and the C. Now we can make the, yeah. I mean, for me.
Can I propose? Sorry to interrupt. Can I propose that we, okay, I think a lot of confusion is because we probably haven't fleshed out option C well enough for people to understand the differences and make a decision right now. So I think we need to maybe expand option C in a single diagram and bring in all these points, well, a lot of the points that we've discussed today, and make it clear what option C looks like. And maybe, because otherwise I think we only have 7 minutes left, we're not going to go anywhere today, and I think there's one or two more agenda items. So I'll just propose I'll take it on me to basically flesh out option C a bit more and then bring that back to this meeting next week.
Sounds good, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think some types of use cases as well that would be supported would be good to look at tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, maybe we need to move on to some of our other agenda items before we run out of time here.
Trying to figure out how I stop sharing.
So this is Pavel from Samsung. May I ask a question?
Yes, sure, go ahead.
Okay, I have a question not about options, but I'm asking about API layer. I'm asking from the perspective of non-real-time leaky and RApps, and I would actually be interested in this API. Is it defined somewhere? How it would like, what would be the temporary layer and the regular, let's say, layer. And by the way, for me, the REST API for the external app is quite good, and I would have nothing against it. So is there a definition of this API?
I have two items to discuss on that. The first is the actual style of the API, and the second is the structure of the payload. And there are other aspects as well that need to be discussed specifically around the API. So on the same page that we were just on, there are other issues that need to be discussed, and there's some discussion. So as a peer of this page, there are discussions. There's two items already on the interface design, because I think that's where we need to go next. So if you just go up one page to issues and assumptions, then you see the interface style and the data representation. Both of these are part of the interface design. So you can go in there and you can see what I mean by interface style. And I recommend that we go for option B. So methods are on the interface for the CPS object rather than on the data objects themselves. So it's not quite object orientated, but it is object oriented from a CPS perspective rather than a data perspective. And I've given some reasons why I would prefer that. And then the second issue was on the data representation. And I'm in the process of writing that. I don't necessarily, it's not as far evolved. I have a gut feeling that that this should be a generic object rather than a highly typed object with things like cells visible in it. But again, this has implications to the REST interface. How much of the REST interface are exposed and visible in the Docker manifest, and so on and so forth. So these are the kind of things that we need to work through. So if there's other issues around this that you would like to engage with, then by all means, please put them onto this list and we'll try and work through them and make decisions as we're working through the POC and as we're working through the design of this thing. It's a way of working that I hope will engage the community.
So did we, I just time check here, we only got a couple minutes left. Did we cover, what other things did we not cover and not cover?
The POC gyra items is not covered. Everything else was covered.
Okay, all right. So there's one JIRA item, right? For the POC. What's the entry? Is it 338? I forget the number.
384 for the POC, I think.
384, okay.
Ben, Tony, maybe you can post that the one you just designed, the detailed design for the API. You say the style or like the API design. Can you post the link in the chat room?
Ben just posted it on the page.
Yeah, it's on the page. So, Joanne, if you just go to our page, you'll see it.
Okay. In where? Okay.
Just in our CNPS page.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So let me just see. JIRA issue filter 385. Oh my gosh. Thank you.
Tuan, do you want to mention the JIRA stuff as well?
Yeah, sorry, I wasn't quite sure whether it was under the same subject, but basically what I have done is we've started an epic underneath the requirements. For now, we have only one epic covering the preparations that we need for starting with the POC. So it has some of the analysis that are ongoing, like the looking at the current config DB, looking at the different YANG parsers, things like that, and where we're going to post, where we're going to put the code. So all of these are user stories that are under the one epic. I think you just had a link there to requirement 382, was it?
Was it 382 or 384? I can't remember. I'm trying to look it up.
For some reason, I have 384 in my mind. But yeah, we made a small start, just trying to get some kind of project level, kind of just checking the project basically through this epic and some of the user stories. Yesterday it was proposed to create other epics based on the proof point for the POC, but I want to discuss that a bit further before I start actually creating those epics, if that's a good way of splitting it down.
384.
Great. So you have already put a code onto the CCSDK now, right? Did you?
Not yet. No. We just started discussions on where it should go. So I've been in contact with Dan Timoney, and he has agreed that it should be added. Well, he has proposed, actually. We thought we needed a new repo. He has proposed it be added to the CCSDK and that the features repo, but that we will keep it separate so it can be moved later and it mm-hmm. will not become dependent on any of the existing code, of course, because it is a POC. Mm-hmm.
So the epic that Tuan was talking to is CCSDK 2508.
CCSDK
2508.
So the Ben, you need to put that in the use case 250. Link.
2508. Yeah.
Thanks. This editor is so horrible. CC SDK. Why does it just randomly put that anywhere on the page? So for the JIRA items, is there anything we need to do for those? 2508.
Yeah. I guess if folks want to join in and help us out, that's always good. Part of the resourcing.
Go with the right thing here. If I go to as a link here, it should take me there. Okay. This is its own epic in CCSDK.
Yeah, so that's the user stories that we've added so far.
This is supposed to be a story off 384, is that right? So I think story should be linked in a different way.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure.
Hold on. So I think this should be, first of all, it should be a story, I think. So
but we can't have, like the scale of this might be too big then.
So but this is a piece of 384, right? Correct?
Well, I was going to have three or four epics and then the epics would be broken down in several user stories.
You're going to have several. So 384 should be the umbrella requirement for all of the entire puck, right? And underneath that, you should have major stories, one of which I believe is CCSDK 2508. If that's not the case, and this 2508 is its own independent development, then you do want this as an epic. If you do want this as a sub-piece of 384, what you need to do is link it to... You put the epic link here, and what you do is you go req 384, and it'll link to this epic. See, so then it'll show that it's got an epic link to this epic, and then 384 will then, if I just push this, will then basically say, oh, you know, one of my children's stories is 2508. Does that make sense? Epics can't link to epics like that, but stories stories can link to epics because they're a piece of an epic.
Yeah. Now down below, you've got issues in epic, and you see it listed there.
Yeah. Because we've made it a link to the So, what I would suggest is that basically all of the RDQs have component work should have a story for each component, and like. For CCSDK, for example, and then put the type as story, and then you, just like I did, you put the edit and then go to the epic link. So I think this is right. I this feels like a piece of 384 to me. So, okay. Anyway, we're at time, guys, so thank you very much. Any final thoughts before we close? So next time, we'll open with some of this architecture POC options from Twain or Karen or Tony here. And okay, great. Thank you, everybody. Have a good weekend. Bye.
Okay, thanks, Ben. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Bye.